Welcome to Walking in Faith, featuring interviews and reviews that help you rediscover the Catholic faith in our culture. And now here is your host, Barbara Schenkel.
Good morning and welcome to Walking in Faith. Today we speak with Susan Brinkman. She's here to tell us about two new exciting programs coming up this March. The first is a facilitator training session for a new program called Young Women of Grace. And then to kick off the Lenten season, Susan's going to talk about how to prepare for Lent by examining the temptations in our lives that come from the flesh, the world, and the devil. And then we speak with Lorraine Bennett. This is a season for so many of us who are caring for elderly or loved ones. She talks about caregivers, and that's a great interview that you want to listen to. So we'll bring you those talks right now. Good morning. This morning we're speaking with Susan Brinkman. You are familiar with her as Woman of Grace journalist, staff reporter. Welcome, Sue.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, we are so blessed to have you in this Philadelphia area because you do so much in regards to strengthening faith and spiritual life, so we can take advantage of your location here. And you've got two exciting events coming up. But the first thing that I wanted to talk about was this Young Women of Grace. What a wonderful ministry this is. Tell us a little bit about that, and then we'll talk specifically about the event coming up.
Oh, Young Women of Grace is just so exciting for me. I've been working on this for many years, at least 5 years, in conjunction with Janet Benkovic, who is the founder and president of Women of Grace. And what I did was I took the Women of Grace foundational study and I redid it for girls ages 12 to 17. And what it does is it gives really that same affirming message to women, but to a younger age group. Mm. And it really helps them to understand who they are in the eyes of God, their feminine genius. It introduces them to that whole concept of the feminine genius. And it's a great way to give them the affirmation that they need to combat this toxic culture that they're really up against out there that's presenting, you know, the only thing that's beautiful, the only beautiful woman out there is someone who behaves the way Kim Kardashian does and Miley Cyrus and that sort of thing. It has nothing to do with the beauty that comes from within ourselves. And it makes girls, whether we realize it or not, and whether even they realize it or not, it makes girls feel very bad about themselves because they try to compare themselves to these images that they see on TV and in their magazines, and they think, well, I don't measure up to that. And I've been, you know, hosting some Young Women of Grace groups here at St. Agnes in Sellersville, and it was just very eye-opening how the girls took to this study. They just were flabbergasted by some of the stuff that they were reading, and I put together the study in a way that it looks like a giant magazine. It's very colorful. It's full of all kinds of fun stuff. It's not just the text. It's got a lot of graphics. It's got a lot of things in it called, like little sidebars. One of them is called Girl Stuff, and this is where we really get to talking in the classes. Like, one of them, it asks the girls, it says, what do you think makes a relationship serious, and what do you think guys think about that, and they're shocked to find out that most guys think that being with someone and wanting to see a future with them is really what makes a relationship serious, not having sex the way it's, you know, presented in the media out there. It's and also questions such as, do you feel pressured to be a supergirl, to have the best grades, to have the best looks? You know, do you feel a lot of pressure from that? All these different little girl stuff things that are scattered throughout the book really get the girls to talking, and you almost have to say, okay, girls, time's up. Mm-hmm. We have to stop, because it just bubbles out of them.
Right.
It's very eye-opening. The study itself does have an imprimatur from Archbishop Charles Chaput, and Nihil Obstadt is from, of course, Robert Pisarczyk of our archdiocese, Reverend Robert Pisarczyk. And it's very adaptable to being given inside of a home. You can do it with your daughter and a couple of her friends in your home. You can do it in the parish. You can do it in a homeschool setting. It's very adaptable. It's a fun read for girls. If you do decide to have and host a group, and we really look for women out there who feel strongly about this and really want our girls to be raised up with confidence in themselves, and not feeling like they have to degrade themselves in order to be beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
If you really feel strongly about that, just think about facilitating one of these groups. And we actually have put together a facilitator's guide that gives you everything that you need in order to run a group. And all kinds of different craft ideas are in this book, and you can it's in a three-ring binder format, so you can just take it right out and copy it. We make it as easy as possible for you to do it. And, of course, you can add all your own stuff to it as well, to the different material that's covered in here. And we cover, you know, who you are in the eyes of God. That's our very first chapter. Then we get into a couple chapters on prayer, and we introduce girls to the different ways that they can pray, and then to the virtues of obedience and wisdom, which are very, very important for us women to protect us from some of the things out there that are trying to tear us apart, such as, you know, an abortion. And we all know that abortion comes with so many sad after effects. This is certainly not something that's, you know, safe, easy, and happy. It's terrible for women. And what we do is we show why obedience to church teaching on abortion, what that can protect you from when it comes to things like abortion. And then also wisdom, learning how to discern God's will for you in your life. And you need holy wisdom for that. So we have a chapter on that. We have a chapter on healing and the different things that we need to be healed from, such as lack of forgiveness, per se. And that gets the girls to talk about, okay, well, maybe I need to let go of this grudge or that grudge, and so that I can let God's grace, you know, permeate my heart. We also have one on the Blessed Sacrament, and we teach people, okay, you know, this is what you might have learned growing up, but here's what it is now. This is strength for the journey. This is why Jesus gave us his body and his blood, because he wanted to be with us and he wanted to make us strong, because he knew what we would be up against out there. So we need to have that. And then, of course, there's a chapter in the very end that just says, okay, now that you've learned all this, now that you know who you really are in the eyes of God, what do you want to do with that out in the world? And that also comes up with some very interesting discussion with the girls. I always say, you know, leave it to the girls. They make this fun, and it's fun for the facilitators too, but we've got to give them a chance, and they really do need somebody to lead them and guide them through the study, and that's why facilitators are so important to have, and that's really what we're looking for.
I think you're right, Sue. I mean, there's a lot of available materials for young women, but to have a Catholic program, which includes, and I'm looking through some of the materials, you have prayers, you have dogma. It's not overwhelming in the format that you use, the magazine format. Here's the Memorare. Here's a prayer to St. Michael. Here's what the Church teaches about this. And then you have role models as saints. And, of course, the sacramental life of the Church, which is so important. So you're getting a really Catholic-infused presentation of what it means to be a young woman of grace. Again, there's so many other Protestant or sectarian Christian devotionals out there, but this really fills a niche in the market.
That's exactly right, and that's why we did it that way, to really be able to present it in material in a way that they would want to read it and want to pick it up and use it. I mean, people have even given this to their girls just as a gift because there's so many sections in here, like, you know, your say and all kinds of different questions and ponder this sections in
almost
here,
like a diary.
Write things down.
Yeah.
And they can use it as a diary. They can look back on it. It's sort of like, you know, a reflection of where they were at this moment in their life. They could keep this book really as a keepsake.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be it's perfect for that. So, it does have a lot of things. It has also contemporary role models.
Right.
Like Lila Rose, who the live action founder, who's into the pro-life ministry. There's different people. Tara Lipinski, the skater who never... the Olympic gold medalist who never started a routine on the ice without praying first to St. Therese of Lisieux. I mean, there's a lot of inspiration out there.
Leah Darrow,
the model,
yeah,
who quit modeling because she was so tired of being put down and degraded. She's in there as well. So we have a lot of different women that they can look up to and they can see. You know, you don't have to be acting and misbehaving like some of our current contemporary stars, in order to be a beautiful woman. You can be very, very beautiful and be godly at the same time.
Yes, we're speaking with Susan Brinkman. We're talking about the Young Woman of Grace program, and you can find that on womenofgrace.com, or you can call 800-558-5452 to find out more about it. There's so much pressure on women. What does it mean to be a feminist in today's world? So there's so much confusion. There's so much pressure. Women are being asked to do it all, you know, to do everything and to do it as the world demands of them. And this is really needed to help them sort of, you know, get through that minefield of what it means to be a woman and to give back to society and to be an important voice in the culture.
And also to show them where they can draw their strength in order to do that.
Right.
Because you need a lot of strength
in order
to be able to stand up for who we truly are in this society where there's so much pressure on us.
Right.
You know, to live and act in a certain way. And I think that's the good thing. It teaches them that their faith, it can't be just the faith of your parents anymore. It has to be now the faith, your faith. You have to, because you're going to need it. You're going to need this strength. You're going to need this grace from God in order to do that. But it also does another very important thing for them. It helps them to establish good, strong peer relationships. And that helps them to find support amongst themselves and amongst their peers. I know that one of the classes I had here, I did it as an after-school club at St. Agnes. And in this club, it was mostly girls from public high school, Catholic girls from public high school. And boy, what they are up against just in their high schools. They haven't even gotten out into the world yet.
Right.
And they're already being persecuted for their faith because they don't, you know, want to conform to certain behavior patterns that are so prevalent right now in today's society. And how much they got from each other to be able to just sit there in our session. Every other week we had it, and to just be able to vent and unload on one another. This is how I felt when that was happening, and blah, blah, blah. And you know what? They were so encouraging towards one another. You can do it. We're behind you. We're praying for you. I mean, it was really heartening to see it. I truly enjoyed that group. I really did. And it took them about 8 or 9 months, I guess, to graduate from it. It is a 40-lesson course. You could do it, of course, a lot shorter than that, but it does have 40 lessons if you want to stretch it out. It was designed actually to go along with the school year, because it is actually curriculum ready when you combine it with the facilitator guide, so you could use it in school if you want to, and you would have a lesson a week. But I do it basically several lessons for each meeting, and the girls are able to handle that even with their coursework in school. So it works out very well for them, but it gives them that peer relationship and that peer support that is so important at that age. It really is. They want to be accepted. They don't want to be the outlier. And I think this is another thing that having these kind of groups does for these girls. And they never really lose their commitment to one another. They get bonded. They get very bonded. We're going to be having a session to train facilitators at St. Agnes Church on March 11th. That's going to be from 10 a.m. in the morning to 3 p.m. in the afternoon, and it's going to come with breakfast and lunch. And some of our girls who have gone through the program are actually going to be there, and they want to bake for it. They're going to bake goodies and stuff like that. They're going to be serving, and they will witness to the program while they're there. So if anyone can make it, that would be something that we'd really love to see them. We'll train the facilitators. You'll get to see all the materials that you'll use. We'll give you sort of a little tips on how to conduct the group. Of course, as I said, the girls will give a little bit of feedback, and it'll start out with Mass at 9 o'clock in the morning, and then we'll proceed downstairs into the church hall, and it'll be a fun day.
Yeah, I want to point out that's St. Agnes Church, 445 North Main Street in Sellersville, and that's March 11th. That's a Saturday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Again, if you want to come for Mass, you can come early, 9 a.m., and that's a continental breakfast and lunch being served. Registration fee of $25 per person. If you're clergy or religious, it's free. And yeah, that's great. A great point. I wanted to just sort of focus in on the facilitator. You don't really need a whole lot of training to do this. You are able to go through this training period, but don't let that put you off. You don't have to have a master's in theology to run a, run a program. I think a willing heart is a good start, and you can look at some of these materials online. But as Sue mentioned, this is a facilitator training session, really just a chance for you to come out and see what this program is all about.
Absolutely. And just to see, so that it will waylay your fears, and you'll see that, oh, everything's actually already done for you. And we just show you how to put those pieces together into a session for the girls. And you can actually go out, if you wanted to preview what it looks like, what the book looks like, you can see a sample lesson at young.womenofgrace.com. So that's young.womenofgrace.com. You can go out there and you can actually page through it and see what's in the first lesson. And then if you want to register for the training session, just go to womenofgrace.com to the events page. And or we have an 800 number that you can call, which is 800-558-5452. You would need to pre-register, though, because we need to know that as far as, you know, the food and to let Father know how many people will be for Mass. So we do require pre-registration for that course. But like you said, Barb, you don't have to have any degree in anything. You just have to have a wide-open heart for our young girls. You just have to be one of those women who feels like, hey, we don't need to conform to this day and age and behave in ways that degrade ourselves as women. We don't have to do that to be beautiful. And then and come and bring that and give that spirit, that affirming spirit to young girls. They really need this right now. And I'll tell you what, when I started this course here, I had no problem finding girls and mothers who wanted their girls to get involved in this course. And that actually spawned three different classes that I'm teaching right now. The one was here at St. Agnes, the after-school group, and then I'm doing some co-op classes for our local co-op, homeschool co-op, too. I'm teaching two classes there. So there's a lot of interest out there for it. But like I said, we just need a couple, some women with some heart to step up and agree to become a facilitator and stop on out to our training session, and you'll have a fun time that day, and you'll be all set to go afterwards.
So this is a time when most young women in their lives have sporting events or after-school clubs or things like that. What time do you recommend if someone's going to be a facilitator? What would you recommend in terms of trying to get this age group of girls together?
Well, what I did was I picked – it took us a while to come up with a date, and I just kept it open, you know, all right, tell me what's best for you. And all the moms kind of agreed on, we did Friday evening at 4:30. It was 4:30 to 6:30 at St. Agnes, and we had pizza.
Oh, nice.
So that meant the girls were getting fed while they were there.
That's nice.
And that worked out. That worked out. And if a girl couldn't make it because she happened to have, she had something going on that night, we just either, we didn't have a meeting, if too many girls, or some of them were involved in the local plays in their school, and so we just didn't have a meeting that night. You just stay flexible with that, right? Because the girls are very busy. It's a good point that you're bringing up, Barb. But pick a time that's the most likely to work. Most likely to work the most often, I should say.
Mm.
And keep it that way. If you want to do it right inside your school, like the co-op, I'm doing it every other Friday out at Our Lady of Częstochowa, right during their co-op program. From 1 to 3 I teach out there. If you want to just do it in your house on a Saturday morning, you could do that too. Or if you want to introduce it into your school and have it taught there, you could also do that because, like I said, it is curriculum ready. So
Lots of options. Yeah, lots of options. Okay, we're speaking with Susan Brinkman. We're talking about the Young Women of Grace new ministry that's coming out. It's called Embrace Your Femininity, and this is for Catholic girls ages 12 to 17. And it's designed to help counter the toxic messages aimed at today's young women and help these girls discover their dignities as daughters of God. All right, Susan, thank you so much for being with us this morning. And actually, right after this break, we're going to have you back to talk about another program that's coming up later this spring. We'll be right back with Susan Brinkman. You are listening to Holy Spirit Radio, 1570 AM in Doylestown and 1420 AM in Coatesville and Chester County.
We would understand. You are the rock of salvation, the only foundation, Lord of all. You are our hope never failing, a mighty fortress is our God.
Welcome back, Sue. We're here to talk about your Deliver Us from Evil, a Lenten reflection on the nature of evil taking place March 10th. Tell us a little bit about this, Sue.
Well, Deliver Us from Evil. This is a Lenten reflection. It'll be 2 hours long, and it's a perfect for the beginning of Lent because, you know, we all have sin in our lives, but we don't all understand the evil that makes us sin. And that's what this reflection is meant to do. You know, spiritual warfare and evil isn't just about the devil. Although we are going to focus on the devil, there's also other evils that we need to be aware of, and we're going to talk about them too. And these evils are the world and ourself. Mm-hmm. And this comes from St. John of the Cross. It's his teaching. He lines them up this way. He says, the world is the enemy least difficult to conquer. The devil is the hardest to understand, but the flesh is the most tenacious, and its attacks continue as long as the old self lasts. So you notice that on the top of that list, the most powerful evil that we need to deal with in our lives is ourselves. But the devil is second on the list. He's the hardest to understand, but also he's controlled by God. And then the world is the least difficult to conquer, although I think some of us would say, wait a minute now, but I don't know about that. The world with all of its lures, you know, all these beautiful things that we want to have and own and possess and become attached to, I think that can be a problem for some of us, too.
Yeah.
But the evil of self, you know, we have a tendency to just really love ourselves, perhaps even too much, right? We love to exaggerate all our good qualities, but, you know, how often do we say a word about the bad things about ourselves?
Mm.
You know, we don't really follow our Redeemer the way we're supposed to be, right? Jesus was obedient to the death for love of us. We obey because we want to get paid, right?
Yeah.
Jesus offered no defense when he was wrongly accused. Well, our accusers barely finished speaking, and we're already cutting them off at the knees. Jesus rarely displayed any anger, even toward the men who were crucifying him, but we lose our temper just for being cut off in traffic. So the self is a very, very difficult evil to vanquish. And, you know, who wants to look in the mirror and see all their pride? That's the other aspect of it that we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about pride and how we just we're stubborn. We tend to have certain temperaments that are inclined to certain forms of pride. I'm going to get into all that. You know, gloomy people, forlorn people, they tend to really get into self-pity. They can tend to be oversensitive. The hot-headed person, their pride manifests as being strong-willed. The cheerful person tends to be self-centered. So we're going to get into all of this stuff during that talk. We're going to talk about the pride of superiority, the pride of intellect, the pride of ambition, of spiritual vanity. There's a lot that our church teaches us about it, and a lot that our church gives us a lot of tips as to how to beat that control.
There's a lot there, Sue. I mean, spiritual vanity, that just perked my ears up. I mean, some people think, you know, and I go to church all the time. It must be good, right?
Right. And we imagine ourselves that we're more perfect than others. And sometimes you're not even aware that you're doing that.
Right. I think our Lord didn't come for the holy. And so if we're in the position where we think, you know, we're there, we've made it, we're good with God, I mean, I think we're always called to a conversion of heart, aren't we? I mean, when you see Christ
absolutely.
And you see him, you have to be humbled and you have to realize there's so much work that we need to do, not to be to the point of frustration or giving up, but just this beautiful journey that he wants to take us with him on. And that does not allow us to ever feel like we're there yet.
Oh, absolutely we don't. And I just always, I laugh because just because I'm teaching this and I'm going to be giving you reflection doesn't mean that I have this all together. I'll be thinking to myself, yeah, I think I'm doing pretty good. I've been really sticking to everything, all my plans with you, Lord. I think I'm doing pretty good. And all of a sudden they'll say, I want you to go teach this somewhere. And it's something like this. And I was like, uh-oh, I got a lot of work to do.
Right.
So I will be presenting this with a lot of humor. Trust me, I won't be preaching at anybody.
Right.
Then you have the evil of the world, attachment to our comforts, to certain, you know, sensible satisfactions, to our own reputation and opinions.
Mm.
These are the evils of the world. You know, we don't stop and think about this stuff, but, you know, we need to do it, and especially during Lent.
Yeah.
You know, we're supposed to love God above everything, with our whole heart, our whole mind, our whole strength. And if your heart is occupied with all this other stuff and with self and creatures, hey, you're not loving them with all your strength. You've got a divided heart.
Right. And I think it's important to point out that this isn't because, you know, God is some sort of a masochistic, powerful being that wants to just say, you're bad, you're bad, you're bad. He's really calling us to happiness, to a joy. Because,
exactly.
Go ahead, you can finish that.
I'm so happy you said that because, this doesn't mean that you can't enjoy legitimate pleasures, because that would be impossible. Man was created and designed to be happy. But we're supposed to love all these things in the measure assigned by God and with a view toward pleasing Him, not really for our own selfish satisfaction.
Mm.
And St. John of the Cross gives you some ideas. He gives three signs, and we'll get into the three signs there, about how to know if your attachments are inordinate or not. They might not be. They might be fine. So we take a look at this second this is the third most powerful evil.
Yeah, you left out the second, I guess. We've skipped over that.
Now, the second one is, of course, the big boy, who is the devil. And the devil, what he does is he uses the evil of the flesh and the world. He pushes those buttons. So he kind of just sits there and runs the gamut. But people don't understand him either. They either trivialize him or they overdo it with him.
Mm.
And the church has some very sound teaching on him and certain things that we do need to understand about Satan in order to have a mature Christian view of evil. And some people think, evil is some sort of a deficiency, or it's caused by, like, the lack of something. You say, well, that person's poor. But we don't realize that evil is a person. It is a being. And as Pope Paul VI says, that he is still active in our world today with predatory cunning. And what we need to do is to understand how he gets at us. And the first thing, one of the first things I get into in this talk is you've got to understand that he is an angel, and he is possessed of all the powers of angels. And I'm not talking about these New Age little garden fairy things that are out there. Angels, as we understand them in the Catholic Church, are tremendously powerful beings. They have intelligence that's beyond our comprehension. They have power beyond human comprehension. And Satan has all that. It's very easy for him to dupe us. He can do that anytime he wants. And we need to learn that and understand who he is and how he operates. And we get into all that. We get into how he manifests in our lives through temptation, which is probably the most common way, but also I'll get into infestations. You would be surprised at how much mail we receive here in our ministry at Women of Grace of people who have poltergeists and ghosts and different kinds of demonic infestations going on in their houses, and they're just thinking, oh, yeah, well, I just named it George. He's our friend. And I think, no, he's not. Do you understand what that is?
Mm.
Do you understand what the church teaches about this phenomena? So we get into some of that. And also, oppression. And then, of course, possession. We get into what those things are and what the signs are. And then how does he get into our lives? And that can be any kind of occult dabbling. And I'm talking about even simple things like divination, tarot cards, reading your horoscopes, things like that. You've got to be very careful about this. Magic is a big thing, especially with young people. They're very much into all this witchcraft and sorcery-type books. Any kind of dabbling in the New Age opens the door for it, because the New Age embraces the occult. They're all one and the same.
Mm.
The New Age doesn't believe in personified evil. They just believe in good or bad choices. So you're wide open. They embrace all kinds of channeling, mediumship, seances, out-of-body experiences, astral projection, all that kind of stuff. So I go through that, what you need to be careful there. Eastern meditation techniques, where you put yourself into an altered state of consciousness and you leave yourself open for the activity of demons. They can come in there and make suggestions to you the same way a hypnotist could make suggestions to you while you're under hypnosis. So there's a lot to be said here about the evil one. But also understanding, who he is and how he uses these other evils to really get at us. So we need to protect ourselves from the devil, and I give, of course, different ways that we do that, which, of course, our church gives us. We have everything that we need. Practicing of the virtues, of course, attending the sacraments and prayer is the number one thing. As Pope Paul VI says, the most decisive defense against Satan is grace and staying in a state of grace. That's what you need to do.
Mm.
Sacrament of reconciliation. The rosary, extremely important, very powerful weapon.
And Sue, isn't the name of Jesus a very powerful...
Absolutely it is.
Yeah.
Absolutely it is, the name of Jesus. We have everything that we need, really, in our church to defend ourselves against Satan. We don't have to be, you know, his victim. We don't have to be victimized by him. We have guardian angels who are at our side all the time that we could call upon. Remember, angelic powers, that's what we're fighting against here. We can't fight him on our own. We need to use the power of God. In order to do that, you've got to make sure you're praying every day. Make sure you're close to God. Use your sacramentals. Exercise water or salt, or at least blessed water or salt. You know, go through your house, sprinkle it with these things. Sprinkle it with holy water. Wear blessed objects, medals, crucifixes, particularly the brown scapular. We have, I go on and on about everything that you can do to protect yourself.
So, very powerful. And again, I want to just say, this is a talk called Deliver Us from Evil, a Lenten Reflection on the Nature of Evil. This is going to take place on Friday, March 10th, from 7 to 9 p.m. That's a Friday night at St. Agnes Church, 445 North Main Street in Sellersville.
Friday night talk, and there will be refreshments and resources available there. Reservations are required. There's a cost of $20 a person. Couples are $35, and students are $10. Clergy and religious are free. And we do ask that children under 12 be accompanied by an adult. And you can register for that by going to womenofgrace.com and on their events page. Just click on the events page, and you'll be able to register there. Or you can call 800-558-5452 to register for that event. That'll be March the 10th, Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. And it'll be very casual. You're just going to be sitting at tables. Bring a notebook, because there's a lot of notes you're going to want to take for this one. And it's going to be just pretty laid back, but it will definitely be giving you a lot of information, a lot to think about as you go through the holy season of Lent.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, you've heard her on Women of Grace nationally. We are so blessed to have her in the Philadelphia area. Please take advantage of this. This is a wonderful opportunity to come out and meet Sue Brinkman face-to-face and to be a part of her great knowledge of the spiritual life. Again, that's two events, Deliver Us from Evil, Lenten Reflection on the Nature of Evil, and that is taking place on March 10th, a Friday night, from 7 to 9 p.m. There's also that Young Women of Grace Facilitator Training Session, and that's taking place on March 11th, again at St. Agnes. And you can come for the 9 o'clock Mass, but the actual training session kicks off at 10 a.m., runs to about 3 p.m. You can also go to young.womenofgrace.com to find out more about that program, or just click onto the main website, womenofgrace.com. You'll find all of the tabs and links there as well. Sue, we thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I guess as we go into our Lenten season, heading out of the Christmas ordinary time, any advice in terms of how we should spend these moments before we actually kick off into Lent in this ordinary time of the year?
I would say to open your heart to Jesus. I always do this right before Lent. Open my heart to him and say, Jesus, show me what you need me to do. You tell me what to do. It's always easier to pick your own sacrifice for Lent than it is to have him pick it for you.
That's right.
So if you got some spiritual guts, one of the things that I always do that every year, I say, show me, Lord, what it is you need me to work on. And he always does. And go with that. Keep your heart open to the promptings of the Holy Spirit and let him lead you through this Lent. Or tell him you would like to do that. You would like to try to do that as best as you can.
Great advice. Thank you so much, Sue.
Okay. Thank you very much for having me, Barb.
All right. Bye-bye. Good morning and welcome to Walking in Faith. This morning we're speaking with Lorraine Bennett. She's written the book A Year of Grace, 365 Reflections for Caregivers. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on your show, Barbara.
Well, thank you for addressing what a critical issue this is, people who are taking care of loved ones. And there's so many different emotions and periods of, exuberance and then complete loneliness or maybe overwhelmed with emotions in terms of being tired. Talk a little bit about what inspired you to write this book.
Yes, well, it all started with my mom, who she had been a very talented, independent, articulate. She was artistic. She was just a fantastic person and a great Catholic as well. And she suddenly suffered this massive incapacitating stroke. So it completely changed her life. Like, she was totally devastated because she could no longer talk. She could no longer walk. She couldn't eat. She couldn't even read, which was one of the things she just loved doing. And she couldn't do anything. And so she's in this rehab out in Nevada, and I was all the way across the country in Virginia. And so I started praying to St. Joseph to help me, we were doing novenas one after the other, trying to get her from there to here, but we had to find a medical flight. Anyway, so we finally, long story short, on St. Joseph's feast day, we were able to fly her out from Nevada to here to Virginia, and then she went into a 24-hour care nursing facility, basically, because she really couldn't do anything for herself anymore. And so from that point onward, I would visit her every day. And so during this process, I was looking for something to read that would be inspiring and helpful. And I would read the Magnificat, but there wasn't anything specifically for caregivers. So that's when I got the idea that maybe I should write this, both for myself and for other people who were in similar situations, whether they cared for an elderly parent at home or whether they had a handicapped child and they couldn't get out much. And that's mainly the idea that I had behind writing this book.
Talk a little bit about your mother. How old was she when she had the stroke?
Well, she was almost 90 when she had the stroke, or 90. So she was up there. But she was, it's just that she was such a vibrant, independent person. That's why it was such a dramatic shock to go from this person who was independently living to somebody who couldn't do anything that she formerly could do. Just kind of put you on your knees.
Absolutely.
At that point, and you say, "Hi, why is this happening?" And you really wonder, what has he got in mind here? And that was kind of I was pondering that, and throughout the book, I reflected on that as well, because I think both caregivers and cared for, sometimes they wonder, why are we in this situation, and what is there, what is the hope that we need to hold on to at this point? And what kind of joy can we find in the situation as well? And so I was hoping to speak to that in these reflections, and not to sugarcoat it, because the reality of the caregiver's situation is just can be really rough, and they can be all alone and exhausted, and hardly getting any respect from anybody around them either, and they can just feel really overwhelmed and devastated by the whole process. So I was hoping to bring a little encouragement into their lives as well, if I could, by these reflections, which are short because caregivers don't have much time.
Right. Did you want to read one of them?
Yeah, I'd love to. Let's see. I guess I'll read the... I just opened to a random page. I'll read from July 12th. It's called Blessing the Song of the World. And the quote is, "You are called with all the saints to bless in the power of Christ's priesthood the song of the world and to perfect it." That's from Gerald Vann. "A blind opera singer comes to perform for the elderly at the nursing home. His voice is powerful, yet gentle, too, bringing tears to our eyes. At the end, I wheel my mom up to him to thank him. He can't see her, and she can't speak, but she holds her hand out to him, and I guide his hand to hers. Two souls, each suffering in their own way, each with a blessing to give."
That's beautiful. And, that speaks to, you talk about the caregiving and a decision that some people make with regards to how frequently they should be in the presence of someone. And it is maybe especially hard if the person can't respond back or you right. don't have any kind of real communication as to their needs and your needs. How do you balance mm-hmm. that?
Yeah, well, I think that's where prayer comes in. And, you know, they say the busier you are, the more you need to pray. And I really felt that very strongly. And I would, you know, always start the day with some sort of reflection. And I think that really helped order my day as well. And I think that for caregivers too, you know, they don't have much time. Like they probably, a lot of times they can't get out and go to Mass or go to a holy hour or something that are, you know, wonderful things that we can do, you know, when we do have time. But sometimes they're stuck in a situation where they just really don't have any time. And so that's why I think the short reflections are really helpful. And one of the things I discovered is when caring for somebody who couldn't speak is that so many other things became more important. Like I started, at first it seemed, things awkward, and I would read to her she was also getting speech therapy at the time. And, you know, they really were trying and working with her, the speech therapist was, but it just really wasn't happening. And as we sort of settled into our routine, I discovered, so many blessings in just being quiet and just being with the person. And even if you can't do any of the things you used to do, do what you can. And we would often I would show my mom pictures from her old albums. So she would definitely recognize them because she could point with, she had one working arm, and she could point her finger, and she could point to the pictures, and I would name the names, and, I would sort of do the talking. but again, I really think there's so much to be learned from being with the person. Even if you can't do anything, you start to appreciate just their very being. Their very existence becomes just a delight. And, her smile, we look out the window and we'd see a bird, and these things became so much more important than our usual rushing about and getting things done and all that sort of thing that we're so used to in our society.
Yes. And you had a routine now. How long did you spend each day with your mother in care?
Okay. Well, I tried to spend as many hours as I could be there. But again, it was the sandwich generation. I was trying to, balance my own work with my family and then visiting her every day. So, I would do as many hours as I could, and take her out for the brief amount of time that I would be allowed to go outside with her. Because most of the time she was in bed and she could have, we kind of figured it out, 45 minutes was her max, and she could get in a wheelchair. And so for that 45 minutes, we would stroll around and look at all the trees and look at the flowers and say hello to people, as we were passing them, and then get her back into her bed. And then, that was kind of her day. It was pretty much always in bed except for that 45 minutes. And, it was quite an adventure in a very different way, I learned a lot from this experience. There are just so many lessons that really about the value and the dignity of human life, and how God can show us that there is joy in suffering if we can, if we can really pay attention to what he's trying to, the grace that he's trying to give us in the moment. So, initially I was just completely upset about the whole thing for my mom's sake and thinking, she can't do anything she used to love. But then we discovered that there were things that she could enjoy in life, even in the state that she was in. And that's kind of what really struck me, that God will help you find the joy in the small things. If, you know, if that's all there are, the small things, you know, God will help us find those things.
Yes.
And,
well, yeah. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I finish with your thought, please.
Oh, I was going to say, that's what I tried to share, some of those things in the book. So, and also some of the really awesome people that were there in the nursing home that I met in the process of this whole thing. So maybe I could read one of them to sort of illustrate what I'm saying about the idea of always having hope, no matter what situation you're in, and also the dignity of the human person, no matter what. You know, in our society, we value our productivity, you know, what you can do, you know, how effective are you? How many things can you accomplish and check off on your to-do list, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to people in the nursing home or people who are home with caring for an elderly loved one, you know, these aren't productive in the eyes of the world. But in God's eyes, these people are even more important. And so that was kind of the thing that I was hoping to convey.
Yes, and you have, as you say, wonderful little quotes for each day. This is a 365-day kind of mini retreat reflection kind of book. And on October 30th, you have a quote from David Snowden, Aging with Grace. And he says, "Dr. Snowden, do you know what my worst fear was?" And now her eyes started to well up with tears. "That I was going to forget Jesus," she said. "I finally realized that I may not remember him, but he will remember me." It's a very poignant quote from someone who has a close relationship with God and is fearful that as they mm-hmm. age, you know, with your cognitive abilities diminishing possibly, that you would have this fear. And I think that's a great consolation that she got,
mm-hmm.
you know, that Jesus would never forget her no matter what happens to her. And then you write about a 68-year-old retired physician began blogging about his own diagnosis with Alzheimer's. And he wants to counter the fear and embarrassment surrounding the disease by discussing his symptoms and his life's journey. And he writes that he is far happier than he used to be. He's more vulnerable and open to others, and yet he fears the loneliness and isolation that the advanced stages of the disease may bring. And, you know, this is really the question in our society and our culture today, is that, you know, you often hear horror tales about people in nursing homes with regards mm-hmm. to being over-medicated and, you know, given drugs so that they basically are just going to be dozing the whole day and gotten rid of.
Yeah.
And I think that's a fear with regards to, you know, the effects with political movements such as euthanasia, that these
yeah.
lives really are basically over. You know, your mother was 90. She lived a long life.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it time for hospice and, you know, a quick exit? So talk a little
yeah.
bit about that.
Gosh, well, you know, I actually, that was a fear in the back of my mind. But we were just really blessed with some great doctors and nurses. And just from the very beginning, when she first had her stroke and she was in the hospital in Nevada, we had a fantastic doctor there because, I mean, she could not eat. And so they had to put a feeding tube in her. You know, and I was, at that moment, I was thinking, oh my gosh, what if they, you know, what if they don't want to do this? And they say, well, just, you know, she can't eat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And because I'd heard, like you said, I'd heard these horror stories. However, we didn't experience any of those. So people were super helpful. And the doctors and the nurses were all so caring. And they, you know, they wanted to make her as comfortable as she could be. So they did have to balance out. You know, it was a daily task figuring out, you know, how much food to give her to keep her going, but in how much, and what about pain, how to relieve her of pain, because she did have pain. And, you know, you don't want somebody just in pain every day. And so every day they would monitor, and we had, you know, care conferences. I think it was once a month we did that, and, you know, we got to get together with the nutritionists and the, you know, the nurses and the doctors, and, you know, we would make sure that she was not over-medicated and that she was receiving just the right kind of care that she needed. And so I'm really grateful for them and, you know, thankful that there's still folks, some good people out there.
Yes. And, you know, you write about how important it was to get to know your mother in this very different stage of her life and how God really brings good through suffering. And what you said you learned a lot through this whole period of transition. So was it, in your sense, a greater appreciation of who your mother was as a person that you wouldn't have gotten had you not been with her in this final stage of her life? Or talk a little bit about what you learned with regards to that.
Yeah, well, really her personality was different because of the stroke. And yet at times I would still get a glimpse of her old personality. So it was kind of an odd thing that we just had to kind of adjust to it. And every once in a while I would get glimpses of, you know, like as I was mentioning with looking at the photographs, or sometimes we would be able to watch a TV show that was something that she had, you know, like an old movie, you know, and it would come on and I would say, oh my goodness, here's one that, you know, there's Jimmy Stewart, my mom loves Jimmy Stewart, you know, and then so we would try to, you know, kind of relate on some of those levels that, you know, that was reflected her previous personality. But her new personality was really very different and really sweet, actually, like just her openness to everyone. She seemed to, I actually have a reflection on this, but I don't think I can find it right at the moment, but she seemed to love everybody equally, and as though they were her old friends. And like when we would be going strolling outside and she would see the gardener, she would wave to him. She would start waving like she knew this man, you know, and she didn't. But, you know, then there would be the janitor. She'd see him, she'd wave, big smile, and he'd always say, God bless you. And he was wonderful. And then we'd, you know, come back inside, and the nurses, and she was so glad to see them because she didn't like being in the wheelchair because it gave her pain. You know, she was so grateful when they would put her back in bed. And so that was a new aspect of her personality. It was just, it was wonderful.
And what recommendations would you give to caregivers? It sounds like you were working, I don't know, full-time or part-time, but how frequently, and the benefits, and, you know, weighing that against your obligations to your family. What advice do you have for people that are potential caregivers?
Yeah, ideally, I guess, it would be wonderful to have one's elderly parents, you know, living with one, you know, as opposed to having to be in a nursing facility. You know, but sometimes it's just, that's the only thing you can do. Like, we were in the process, for example, of, you know, we would have had to get a wheelchair ramp and get a van that can have a wheelchair in it, and to even get my mom into our house. So, you know, we were actually looking into that, but we ended up finding this really wonderful place where she was able to stay, and I really think she probably had better care there than I could have actually done in my own home. So I know it sounds, maybe it sounds bad to say it's not always the best to have the person in your home. Maybe it is, I mean, but not everybody's situation is the same. So if you can, I think that's wonderful, but sometimes you can't, and I think that these decisions you just have to make in prayer, and if you have a trusted priest that you can ask for advice, and that would be the thing to do. These are really difficult situations to be in. I was just talking to a lady at a conference, and she was caring for her mother-in-law who has Alzheimer's, and in her own home, but the mother-in-law sometimes just wanders off, you know, just leaves, and that's a real danger with somebody with Alzheimer's. And so, you know, that's a scary kind of situation to be in. So whether you need caregivers, home caregivers, you know, coming into the home, or whether you need to go seek outside help, you know, every situation is different.
And how do you balance your own family needs versus those of your extended family that you're caring for?
Yeah, well, I think that's the prayer part. I think that's the key. And I can't, like, emphasize enough that I had to go to, for me, I would go to daily mass, and that was kind of the reordering of everything in the day. If I didn't pray daily, if I didn't go to daily mass, then things would get out of control, it seemed to me. And I would start stressing about, you know, I'm not doing this at home, or I'm not doing this for my mom, or I'm not, you know, you start to, the anxiety level increases. And you really just have to put that back, you know, give it back to God and say, God, help me, you know, you know, God is the God of order, and he knows what is the perfect order for our lives. And so we just have to beg him and ask him to help tell you how, you know, when, if something is getting slightly out of control or you're starting to feel overwhelmed and stressed out, place your trust in him and ask him to help you organize. And for me, it was just really, it really worked out extremely well as long as I had all those pieces together. Like, I had to visit my mom. I had to go to mass. You know, I had to work on my book. I was writing the book at the time. So, you know, just as long as I kept those things in balance, then I was balanced. I wasn't, yes, like turning into a hysterical, stressed out woman.
You know, and we would be very remiss, Lorraine, if we didn't point out that you're also, I'm looking at this now and I'm realizing you're the author of some of the most standard books that parents use with regards to their own marriages and their own children. It's The Temperament God Gave You, The Temperament God Gave Your Spouse, and The Temperament God Gave Your Kids, as well as one on emotions, The Emotions God Gave You. So many of our listeners will be familiar with you as the author of those publications as well.
That's right. Thank you. Thanks for mentioning those.
Yeah, and how important is that with regards to relationships in a family?
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. My husband, who is a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I, we decided to kind of resurrect this a classic concept from Catholic spirituality, which is the concept of the temperaments, and it's also something that is discussed, of course, in contemporary psychology. But the interesting part about that is that it has this long tradition within Catholic spirituality. And so we thought, well, you know, this is something that's really great, that very helpful, practical for parents and spouses to understand each other's temperament and to understand the temperament of your kids. So that's what kind of launched us into writing these really practical books about temperament.
And Lorraine, where can people find you if they'd like to find out more about those books or about this book, which is called A Year of Grace, 365 Reflections for Caregivers?
I think the best thing is probably just you could check on Amazon, and all our books are there on Amazon. I created a website, but unfortunately, it's not, I don't think it's that functional, so I can't even give you the address of it.
Okay,
I just
okay.
created it,
all right.
And I think I'm going to have to start a blog or something, but...
Yes. Well, I know the technology, you know, sometimes it's there and sometimes it isn't day to day with regards to these things. But
yeah,
we are speaking with Lorraine Bennett, Lorraine Bennett, Bennett. Again, she's written the book A Year of Grace, 365 Reflections for Caregivers, and with her husband has authored The Temperament God Gave You, The Temperament God Gave Your Spouse, and The Temperament God Gave Your Kids, which are great ways to figure out why we respond differently to certain situations, and knowing that and having that knowledge ahead of time helps us to get along with each other better. And so those are great books to also tap into as well. Thank you so much, Lorraine, for being with us this morning.
Well, thank you so much, Barbara, for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
Are you working on anything new?
Not right now.
Taking a breather, right?
Yeah, I am taking a little breather, yeah.
That's well deserved. Thank you so much for being with us, Lorraine.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on your show.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye.